Blog Talk Radio.
By our sponsors. First off, that would be WrestleWarehouse.com. If you need professional wrestling, DVDs, Lucha Libre masks, t-shirts, Jeff even carries some WWE swag if need be. Check it out, WrestleWarehouse.com, and let Jeff know that KZ from Rearguard Radio sent you. And our second sponsor for the evening will be FogCityWrestling.com. Fog City has a show coming up in July. They'll be debuting at the Kezar Auditorium in San Francisco off of Haight Street and Stanion. It's a pretty historical building. It's just a really nice spot to see wrestling. And they'll also be having, in the month of May, there will be a DVD release party that we will be announcing more information when it comes in. But on the line, I have my first guest, the brains, the brawn, and everything else behind Between the Ropes, and the man that carries Vito DiNucci every week, Mr. Brian Fritz. What's going on, Fritzy?
Hey, man. How's it going?
Oh, fine and dandy. Fine and dandy. I had to put over the fact that you carry that weenie Vito on your show.
I don't know about that necessarily, but we all get along pretty well over there.
Oh, Vito's a good guy, and he has the best Dusty impression ever. So.
Yeah, it's not too shabby, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the first time I had him on, I had him cut a promo on Brian Alvarez as Dusty. So, and hey, that was just the best. That was just the best. And, of course, Brian no-sold it, but, you know, that's typical Alvarez.
He might not have gotten the joke.
Well, he does say that he's older in his mind as opposed to his body. But now, let's jump right to it. You decided to convert Between the Ropes to a pay site, which is cool, because if you have the product, if you have, you know, the things that are available, you know, that you can charge for, what made you decide to go to a pay site?
Well, it's actually an idea that I have been wanting to do or thought about doing for probably a good 4 or 5 years, and basically, I just thought that now was as good a time as any, because we did have the product. We've been around for almost 10 years. I had all the archives of the show, and there was enough demand where I thought that people would want to, possibly pay for it, you know. And then on top of that, you know, I thought there was enough extra stuff that we could put that would bring some value to the site. So it actually took me about a year to end up doing that once I decided to do that, just from the standpoint of getting all the archives and putting them together for the site. And because, to be honest, with all the old archives that we used to have, all the shows, a lot of them were, as stupid as it sounds, but there were a lot of them were in cassette from way back in the day. So a lot of that was converting that to MP3, which is a tedious task, to say the least, and organizing everything and pulling interviews and putting them in separate files and whatnot. So it took me a while to do it, but once we got it done and we were able to create the site the way that we wanted to do it, You know, we decided to go forward and see how we go. And, you know, it's been a process where we've always loved doing the show, but it's been kind of a labor of love. And now we're like, you know what, we can be a little bit more business-oriented with it, where we can still have a lot of fun, but at the same time that, you know, if we can make a little bit of money as well for all the work that we've done, we felt that that would be a nice thing to do too. So that's exactly the direction we went, and so far it's worked out.
I have to agree. The site is slick. It's easy to navigate. It's top of the line. And you know what? I'm going to go on the record because I know the webmaster. The Between the Ropes website does look better in outline. It looks better than the Figure Four site. And those are for the Figure Four listeners out there. But now, as far as the archives, how many episodes do you have archived, and how long did it take you to upload them all?
I think the show that we did this past week was, I think we've done 448. Yeah, 448, 449, somewhere around there. So, like I said, we're coming up on 10 years of doing the show. So, like I said, it took me a while to put everything together because not only, you know, on the site do we have all the archives of the shows, but what I did was I pulled all the interviews off too because I know some people would just rather listen to interviews. So just organizing all that and giving everything together. So it took me about a year to do everything, and, you know, I just wanted to kick myself in the ass the whole time, considering that I should have been doing this all along instead of getting behind on everything. And now I finally got all caught up.
Tremendous. Tremendous. Well, you've done, you know, over 400 shows. Who's your personal favorite guest?
It's tough, you know. We've been lucky enough to talk to a lot of guys that we enjoy speaking with. I think Mick Foley and Chris Jericho have always been the best for us just because they're very honest about it, they're very entertaining, they're easy to talk to. You don't even feel like you're interviewing somebody necessarily. You feel like you're just having a conversation with them for the most part. And, you know, they're just good guys that are easy to talk to, you know, that, you know, and have done a lot in wrestling. And they understand the business a lot. And I think, you know, that makes it even easier to talk to somebody like that. You know, Chris is a guy that luckily we met years ago and has always been really good to us. And same with Mick. You know, to be able to speak with him as many times as we have, it has been fantastic.
Well, I've noticed that when you have guests on, it's a lot like how we do our show. It's more of guys, you know, sitting up at a bar, having a beer, and just talking, as opposed to, you know, something that you would hear on typical sports radio. And I love that type of, even though we're the anti-format, but that's, you know, the format that we do like, because it's more of a discussion, you know, as opposed to, you know, something so stuffy. And I've noticed that also with the guys that you have on your show. Well, okay, we have the worker, which is Vito. You have Dickerman, the comic relief, and you're the straight guy. And it's I've tried a quote-unquote three-man booth on a radio show, and it just hasn't worked for me. How do you get it to work?
You know, it was something that originally we were a little bit wondering how that was going to happen, because for years it was just me and Dickerman doing the show. And we had started – well, I can't even say that, to be honest with you, because we did have another friend of ours, B. Randall, who originally started the show with us. But he was more of a producer and just kind of chimed in a little bit. But then once he left, it was definitely just me and Dickerman for a while. And we just thought it would be an easy transition to bring in Vito because we had gotten to know him, and I knew we thought that he could add some more perspective to the show and the role that he's in. And he's done that, and plus he's very entertaining as well. So it's just one of those things of everybody kind of knowing your role, knowing where you fit in best, and just, you know, making sure that everybody has time to where they can say their point and we can fit it all in. And, you know, the more that you do it, the easier it is where it's not forced. You don't feel like you're going out of your way. Everybody kind of knows when they're going to chime in. You know, the cool thing is it's not like it's something where one of us isn't there. because we're all in the same studio together. It's not like somebody else is somewhere else. That can make it very difficult. But when you're all friends, when you're all in the same spot, and you're all working together, I think that kind of chemistry can come out. And once you get that down, it's easy to keep that. What we know each other very well. We're all friends. We hang out on a regular basis, so that makes it easier as well. But doing it for a while and just kind of getting in that rhythm has made it to where it's not even a chore anymore to try to make it work with three guys doing the show.
Well, Lito does he does definitely bring something different to the table because he's been in there. You know, he's been in the New York locker room. You know, he's been in the WCW locker room. You know, he knows the boys, you know, as far as the locker room type of atmosphere is. And then you know the boys as, you know, quote-unquote media, which I don't know if that's offensive to you or not, but
I don't think it is. I mean, I think the good thing that with a lot of the wrestlers that I know or I've been around or whatever is that, luckily enough, they respect the show. For the people that do know it or the ones that don't, they're easy to talk to for the most part. Guys will trust me enough because there's always that thing, too, where if you're around wrestlers sometimes and you see them on their own, on their personal time, or even backstage at a show or whatever, there has to be a little bit of a trust value there. It's like, can I trust this guy, or is he going to say something, on a radio show or in public somewhere, that's going to say something that's going to make me look bad, or something that's happened behind the scenes that I want to keep quiet, or, you know, just different things like that. Sometimes it's not even something that's major. It's not something that the guy would look back anyway. You know, they know, hey, it's the wrestling business. They want to keep something quiet. And there's got to be a little bit of a trust value there, and I think I've built that up enough. And same with the other guys on the show as well, is that I think people feel like they can trust us enough where if we're behind the scenes, we kind of know what can be talked about and what can't be, because there's going to be some certain unwritten rules of things that, you know, guys don't want to be said in public.
Mm. Yeah, I have to agree with you. That's I've been – you know, getting my name out per se up here. I'm outside San Francisco, and as far as the independent companies around here, I've been, you know, going to shows. I have one of the companies is one of my sponsors, and you know, it's more of a friendly type of basis, and that way, you know, it's more of two peers, and I'm able to say, hey, you know, would you like to come on the show? You know, are you busy in a couple weeks? And that's, you know, I like that type of rapport with the boys because it's just so much easier to do business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they don't feel threatened by a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's going to be here's the way that I look at it a lot of times. There's a lot of different guys that are out there, whether it be Meltzer or Brian Alvarez or the PW Insiders of the world or different guys like that that do a great job. And they're able to report information and get things out there. And, you know, for a show like what we do, I'm not out there trying to break news. Every once in a while we'll get something, but I'm not going out of my way to try to break news. And that's not really the role that I have or something that I want to do. The role that we have is, hey, this information is out there. You know, we can credit different guys with that information that gets out there. Plus, we watch the different shows. We've followed it long enough to where we understand a lot of different things, you know, what's good, what's not good, or at least in our own opinion, what we think is good, not good. I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but that's kind of the role that we have. So we're not sitting there saying, hey, we're trying to get to know guys because we want to get scoops from them. You know, every once in a while if we get one, that's all fine and dandy. But that's not what we're necessarily trying to do. Our role is to put on a show that's entertaining, that people can find out some information, you know, when it comes to different things that are going on in the business. But at the same time, they can be entertained by a show that talks about the business and shares their opinions with some insight and has some interviews and have some fun with it, too. So, you know, that's kind of the role we have. And I think that for a lot of the wrestlers, not only do they respect the opinions that we have, but they know that, you know, they're not worried about us saying, hey, you know what, we're trying to hang around here and trying to get to know you because, hey, we want to get the 411 on whatever went down, you know, and that's not the case.
Well, that's a lot like we are. We're more for entertainment value, you know, and we really don't go after big names. You know, we go more for indie guys, you know, indie promotions. You know, they can get their name out there and whatnot. But from time to time, we do get lucky as far as the news is concerned. When Baby Doll leaked out that Jake Roberts went into rehab at the expense of the WWE, we just by luck had Baby Doll scheduled for a show the day after. And we just got lucky, and she was able to explain herself. And I was like, oh, wow, okay, I got lucky. I didn't go out of my way to get this. Yeah, I just, it fell in my lap. And we don't, quote-unquote, report news. We don't break anything. You know, we just talk about what's going on, and, you know, we give our opinions and whatnot. Because, to be honest, that's Dave's deal. That's Brian's deal. That's Johnson's deal. We just don't do it. You know, I sit on the phone for a couple hours, a couple nights a week, and I talk shit to the boys. That's what we do, you know. And there's enough news sites out there. We have RubberGuardRadio.com where I have columnists that just write about, you know, what they've seen the weekend before. I even have a couple workers that write for me, and then we archive our shows. That's all it is, and it's simple. And this thing that we do, you know, radio, I'm internet radio, you're real radio, but what we do is supposed to be, you know, for the fans, you know, for the guys that want to listen to something on the way to work. You know, that's what I'm trying to push my product to.
You got to have some fun with it. There's got to be some entertainment value, you know, and like I said, with our show, I mean, we all know our role on the show, and I understand every once in a while I can be a little funny, but I don't have the comedic value of a Dickerman or Vito. I know that. I mean, I'm not stupid about it. I have my moments, but that's not my role on the show. You know, my role on the show is kind of try to guide some things, you know, and kind of keep everybody going, you know, so we all, you know, stay on that even plane, I guess, or whatever, direct the show in the right direction, you know, and then, you know, let those guys do what they do best, man. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that, you know, Dickerman and Vito are entertaining as hell. I think that's one of the things that's made the show work, you know, is not only being able to get some solid guests and you know, understand the business, you know, and be able to give educated opinions about different things, but also, you know, it's got to be the entertainment factor. And, you know, not only are those guys smart, you know, but they're entertaining. I mean, it's fun to do the show with those guys, you know, so that makes it real easy, you know, and it makes the show good. You know, if it was just me, I can only fathom to see what that show would be like.
Well,
I mean, I'll freaking admit it, because, you know, we have like this running joke, you know, because, I mean, I'm single, and both of those guys are married and have families. You know, Dickerman had a daughter last year, and Vito's got three kids, you know, and so they're both very busy. They're both family guys. So, you know, there's a lot of times where something comes up and one of them can't come in. Anniversaries, birthdays, you know, something else. There's a family thing going on. There's some kind of emergency, whatever, you know. So, you know, and one of the running things is I've never missed a show. We've done it for almost 10 years. I've never once missed that show. But those guys have taken different nights off, you know, because they need to or they want to. And, I mean, hell, Vito missed the damn show a couple weeks ago because he wanted to see Rush, the old fart. But, you know, it's fine. So he went out and saw Rush, you know. And instead, you know, me and Dickerman did the show. But, you know, we have kind of this joke almost running around going, what the hell is going to happen one night when both of them have something going on? And I'm like, God, you know, I'm going to have to do the show by myself. I'm not saying I can't do it, but I don't think it's going to be as good because – you know, that entertainment value of those guys isn't going to be there. That, you know, there's that built-in chemistry and that synergy that goes on with that, and that's not going to be there. But, you know, we're just waiting for the day when that's going to happen, because something's going to happen, and I'm going to be rolling up there, and it's just going to be me.
Well, then you can call me, and I'll come on and I'll help.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that, yeah.
But I do have my co-host, Alex Shane, has come out from under his rock. What's up, Al?
Okay.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, Marine aviation can be kind of hectic sometimes. Hey, I saw you and Brian Fritz on, so I decided to tear myself away from work and call in for a couple minutes. So it's an honor to speak to you, Mr. Fritz. My question is this. I don't want to – well, I have a couple of questions, as Casey always knows. But My big question is this. Now, I don't want to take any hits away from Brian and Dave's newsletter, but we all have an idea of why Michael Pierce Hayes is on a suspension. So I just would like to know your thoughts on professionalism inside a corporate workplace, which I think you're somewhat familiar with, and then I'm in the military, so I'm familiar with it. So, I mean, I understand that, you know, people come from their different backgrounds, but what are your opinions on professionalism in the workplace?
Well, you know, with a guy like Michael and some other guys, there's going to be that good old boy network. Because, I mean, like P.S., you know, he's been around the business for a long time, and he's come up in a different era, you know, where different things were more accepted. And guys, you know, and to some extent, you know, people still do that. I mean, Michael's probably not the only one. He might be the only one in that company, but I'm just saying when it comes to other companies and other businesses, stuff like this sometimes happens, you know, where guys do, you know, act in ways that they shouldn't do. The problem is now that we're in a more PC world and we're in a world where things get out a lot easier because of the internet, because of entertainment shows and, you know, how far stretch, you know, everybody can be now, because in the past, you know, you couldn't even find anything out from side to side of the country for days. Now it's, you know, just a click of the mouse. So things like this just can't be accepted in this day and age to be acting the way that he has been and, you know, using the kind of the language that he was. I mean, he can say, hey, this is just the way I've always been. I don't mean anything by it. It's not anything that I think is, you know, vulgarity or putting somebody down. But, man, that's the way it is. You just can't use that kind of language, and he has to get that through his head, saying, "You know what? This might have been the way that I've always come up, and it's nothing wrong to me." But he has to realize that it is wrong, and he has to stop doing things like that. You know, you're with a publicly traded company, you're with a huge corporation, and things like that just cannot be accepted. And I'll tell you what, it's amazing that. I don't know how long it's been going on for, if this is just an isolated incident. I don't believe it is, but it's amazing that it's taken this long for something to happen when it comes to a suspension, and it's something that's going to have to be corrected very quickly, or otherwise, you know, somebody else can make a big stink about it if something like this happens again. It has to be an isolated situation. It has to be something that's corrected immediately, and it can't happen again, or else WWE's going to have to put their foot down. You know, and it's not just Hayes. I mean, if something like this happens with somebody else, you know, they need to be suspended. They need to be dealt with. It's just the way it is in this day and age. You can't be acting like that.
Yeah, I totally agree, especially considering they had all three of the presidential candidates on their show on Monday, and then stuff like that gets bantered around the back. Not that it doesn't happen in other companies or other corporations, but, I mean, it's
right,
definitely
that's,
not.
That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing when you're talking about WWE being this huge company that stretches out worldwide, this conglomerate, and then they have three people on their program on Monday night, like you said, that are running to be the president of the United States, to be the most powerful person in the world, and then one of your high-ranking officials in your company is still acting like that and using that kind of language and thinks, hey, you know what, it's okay, you know, come on, man, we're all good old boys, you know, I don't mean anything by it. Yeah, well, you know what? Somebody else is going to be offended by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And Ring of Honor, now, recently during WrestleMania weekend, they came and they put on two shows in the Florida area. I was just wondering real quick, what are your thoughts on the growth potential you see for Ring of Honor 2009, 2010, if they don't get television? And then also, if they do get television, how do you see it? Do you see any growth in their – well, how much further do you think the product will grow if they would get television? That's
well,
kind of like a three-quarter.
Yeah, well, I think the good thing with Kerry Silkin, with Gabe Sapolsky, they've done a great job with Ring of Honor. I think they know what their limits are. They know what their growth potential is, but at the same time, they don't want to just jump out there and say, we're gonna do this because we can do it. They want to take those baby steps because they still want to be a profitable company, and they don't want to do anything. It's going to damage the growth of that company going forward. Their business plan has been tremendous. I think the way that they've been able to make money and not only selling the shows, you know, to the live crowd, but obviously to the DVD audience has been tremendous. They're doing the work with the pay-per-views right now, which You know, that they're not doing huge business with, obviously, but at the same time, I'm sure they're making a little bit of money, or they're at least getting the name out there more. A TV deal obviously would help them, but I think they're only going to do one if it's beneficial for the company. If they're not going to do something that, where they say, hey, this is going to cost us a lot and we're going out on a limb here, it's a big risk. They want to put as little risk as possible in something like that. And, you know, going forward in the next few years, I mean, Ring of Honor, I think, has – you know, a lot of potential to still grow. It's not going to be WWE. I don't know if it'll ever be TNA. It could possibly be a level of TNA, but I think that would be years away. But at the same time, their business plan has been good for them because they make money. And that's something that, you know, up until possibly this year, TNA hasn't been able to say. So I think Ring of Honor has a lot going for them, you know, the way that they kind of put their plan together business-wise, the style of their product is something that you don't see a lot of other places. Obviously, it's something different from WWE and from TNA. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but it's something that's worked for them. And, you know, I think they've still got some great years ahead of them. And, you know, I know that they're going to be expanding and starting to go to some other places. Like you said, the first time they've ever come down to Central Florida was during WrestleMania weekend. They're coming back again, I believe, in August, you know, down to run in the same building. I mean, that building, I believe, holds 1,500 people. They sold out both nights. One of the nights, right there, I mean, literally, you could have walked from the building that they were at to the WWE Hall of Fame in about 30 seconds. They're that close. They're literally the building where Ring of Honor ran, which is the Downtown Rec Center here in Orlando, is just outside the parking lot of the Amway Arena where the Hall of Fame was. The Hall of Fame filled up with 10,000 people or whatever that was, and Ring of Honor was out there, and they sold out their show that same night. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that like Ring of Honor and the product that they have. So, you know, they're doing good business right now, and it'll be interesting to see where they go forward.
Do you see TNA – maybe wanting, because obviously a company is going to want to stay around for a good amount of years. So do you think it'd be in TNA's best interest, since Ring of Honor does have contracts with their upper tier talent, to maybe start a developmental system somehow?
I
because
think so.
Where's the next crop of talent going to come from?
That's the big question too when it comes to WWE. Obviously, they got Florida Championship Wrestling, but you know that's just one territory. They got a lot of different wrestlers down there. You know, I think that's a huge question going forward with the wrestling business is where's the next crop of talent going to be? Where are the stars of the future coming from? And there needs to be more developmental systems. I'm surprised WWE doesn't spend more money on it and they don't have three or four different territories going. When it comes to TNA, I think it would love to do something. I think they should hook out with Ohio Valley. Since WWE's not doing anything with them right now, I mean, I don't know how much money that would cost or how that would all work, but I think that could be a good situation. You know, Booker T's got his group in Texas, which I think is doing well. You know, and there have been some talk when he was at WWE about him speaking with them about making that a developmental territory. So I'm, you know, some of these places, all they need is just a little bit of backing just to make sure that they, you know, they are – safe monetarily, I guess, would be the best way to say it. So, you know, they need more developmental territories, not only with WWE, but with TNA as the business goes forward. So that way you have a good, solid place where guys can learn, they can get the training that they need, and they can also get booked on some shows on a regular basis and get out there, because that's the only way you're going to improve is going out there on a night-by-night basis and learning the craft, taking on different guys, wrestling in front of live audiences, and learning how to work in front of a live audience. It's one thing to go in a ring when you're just training and you're having a match that way. It's another when there's only 50 people in the building and you're trying to get everybody to pop, you know, for stuff that you're doing and getting into your match.
Mm-hmm. I think that WWE, I mean, because I guess we'll see in the next coming years how Florida Championship Wrestling will end up developing. But, I mean, WWE, I mean, if you ever go to a live WWE show, those guys, I mean, obviously, I mean, the guys on the main events have been wrestling and weren't brought up to the developmental system, except for Randy Orton and a couple of others. But WWE guys are so incredibly solid in the ring that I don't even know if it comes across that well on television. But in the ring, and it's just amazing, and you don't see that like your standard independent show. So, I mean, definitely, I mean, you don't want to see the WWE product actually go down because they're not – investing in the future.
Oh, yeah. And that's what some people talk about when it comes to, like, the end of the territory days, like somebody like a Chris Jericho and Raven, you know. And Raven obviously isn't with a major company right now, but, you know, and I think to some extent somebody like a Jerry Lynn, you're talking about guys that were part of the territory days where they were to wrestle in front of the smaller crowds, and they toured the country, and they went to the small shows, and they had to go out there, and they had to learn their craft the hard way. And you just don't see that anymore. The business has changed, and it's not the wrestler's fault. You know, it's a different game out there, where if a guy shows he has some potential or he has the right body, he has the athletic gifts, but, you know, he hasn't put it together to be a wrestler, but a company like WWE says, hey, man, you know, you've got the right look. We can train you. So guess what? You're not going to have to learn the wrestling business by going around and working a lot of, you know, shows that way or whatever. We're going to bring you in our developmental system. And if you start showing something, or, you know, Vince McMahon or somebody in the creative team sees that and says, hey, you know what? This guy's not ready to in the ring yet totally, but, you know, he can kind of get by, but he's got the right look. And we think we got a gimmick for him. We think we got a storyline. Let's bring him up. Well, that's going to end up hurting the wrestler because they're not ready yet. It's going to end up hurting the WWE because storyline's not going to work if somebody's not ready. You know, bottom line, it's really going to hurt the wrestler because if they get brought up too soon, you know what? People will remember that saying, golly, they brought this guy up. He was a freaking joke, you know? So then what do? They take him back down, try to get him ready, you know, polish him up, get him to improve, and try to bring him back. Well, a lot of times people are going to remember that first time. You know, so it's a double-edged sword, kind of, you know. The one thing I'll say with Florida Championship Wrestling, what they keep talking about doing and they're trying to implement, is they want to do they want a tour on a regular basis where they pick out some different cities throughout Florida and they can have the guys working 4 or 5 nights a week. So that way they're actually on the road. They're working in front of different crowds all the time. They're not working in the same building. They're not working just once, maybe twice a week. They want those guys out on the road and working as much as possible so they can improve and they can get used to being in front of those live audiences.
Mm-hmm. And have you had the opportunity to be able to go to any of the Florida Championship Wrestling shows?
I haven't gone yet. I haven't been able to. I'd love to get down to Tampa or wherever they're going to be running next time and go in to see a show. I said they're starting to put together like what their routine is going to be for hitting different towns, but mostly right now they're down in the Tampa area, and I haven't gotten a chance to go down there yet.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I really was a really big fan of Colt Cabana in the independent scene, and then now he went to OVW in Florida, and I haven't been able to see that much of him. It's really unfortunate. Who were some guys?
I missed out on seeing Lacey Von Erich, man. I'm so disappointed in that. Jeez almighty.
Oh, we're going to see her. We're going to see her out here in San Francisco on June 7th. She is working an independent date out here. So I am going to see her in the flesh.
Dude, they were advertising a while back when she was still there. It was going to be Lacey Von Erich versus Natty Neidhart. And I was just like, oh, my God. I'd love to go see that show. But, yeah, Miss, yeah. Like, I mean, we saw that and we're like, our eyeballs about jumped out of our head. We're like, whoa! But, yeah, didn't see it.
Who are some guys that you see in Ring of Honor or any other independent scene, and then you think could be, you know, maybe future potential superstars for the World Wrestling Entertainment or someone, a superstar on a national level?
You know, Nigel McGuinness is really improved. I mean, that's a guy that, you know, you see what he was and how quickly he's improved and what he is in the ring now and the way that he can, you know, not only wrestle, but wrestles a smart style and the way that he can cut promos. I mean, I remember when he had his tryout match with TNA a couple of years ago, and you could tell that, he was trying so hard, but, you know, he didn't impress that night, unfortunately. And, you know, TNA didn't pick up on him and say, hey, just had an off night. So, you know what, Nigel's just like, fine, you know, I'll go back to the drawing board. I'll just keep working, and I'll continue to improve. And he's found a great spot for himself in Ring of Honor. But sooner or later, you know, Nigel is a guy that I think has a lot of potential. That's really going to be a good star, you know, for whether it be TNA or whether it be WWE. I think he's got a ton of potential in him.
I remember I saw Nigel. I said this story a couple of weeks ago, but I remember I was at the Battle of Los Angeles that PWG puts on out here, and then Nigel was just at the merchandise booth, and then Brian Alvarez was there, and I walked up to him and said, you know, Nigel looks like a star. I mean, he was the
right.
only guy. I mean, Brooke brings out all the, you know, the top independent talent, like Danielson was there, and you know, Alex Shelley was there. A lot of big name independent guys were there, and then Nigel was the only guy that came across as a star.
Well, some of that's just the way you carry yourself, you know, the way you look overall. You know, and I think Nigel's got that look.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think we may have just lost Alex. I think his boss may have walked up to his desk.
Did you just get sucked into the vortex right there? Is that what that was?
Well, some say that the U.S. military is a vortex. So he is a Marine, and he is on duty. So he was calling in from work. He just had to talk to you. But
gotcha.
Well, he did bring up independent guys who you think, you know, would be able to make it at another level. What do you think of this guy's a friend of our show, and he's probably my favorite independent performer now, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce.
You know, I've heard a lot about him. Yeah, I haven't got an opportunity to see a lot of his work, but I mean, he's gotten some good reviews from everything I understand, you know, and there's some other people whose opinions I trust that have talked about him. So, I mean, there's another guy that I think he's just looking for a break right now. You know, part of the problem is, too, it's like TNA's got a pretty full roster, so it's like, are they going to be bringing in more guys or not? And if so, you know, does that mean they're going to get rid of somebody else? Because one of the complaints people keep having about TNA is, hey, the roster is so packed, you know, some of these other guys you're not giving much TV time to. They've got tons of potential. You know, we've seen what they've done on the indies. Why aren't you giving them more time? So you've got to go against that. And then with WWE, you know, 9 times out of 10, if not even more, you know, no one's going to come straight to the main roster. I mean, they're going to send them down to, you know, Florida Championship Wrestling or whatever. So it's tough for somebody really to find a slot on one of those brands right now.
I mean, if Colt Cabana can't just come right up.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know. Like,
he was ready 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'll give you another example of a guy that I know that's been wrestling for a while now is Ricky Reyes.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ricky's down here. And he was with TNA for a very short time, and you know he was doing stuff with Conan and them for a little while. He was like one of the extras for the group, and but they decided not to sign him to a contract. And he's still working a lot of independents. He's working down in Puerto Rico while he's the IWA champion. And Ricky, man, I mean the guy can talk, the guy can work, the guy's got a great look. I mean, he's just a guy. I'm sorry, what?
Was that Machete?
Yeah, Machete.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he should be out. He should be with one of those companies right now. I mean, I think it's almost a crime that TNA hasn't signed him. I mean, he's a perfect fit for them, I think. And, you know, I could see him working in WWE, too, you know. And this is a guy that, you know, within the next couple of years, he's got to be with one of those companies. If he's not, it's ridiculous. But, you know, he goes out there and he's having fun right now. He likes working in Puerto Rico and, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, he's gonna get his break, I think. You know, for some of these guys, they gotta keep the right attitude about it too, saying, you know what, I know it can be very frustrating trying to get into one of those places where they want to work, but at the same time, you gotta keep the right attitude. You gotta keep going out there, you gotta keep busting your ass and doing the best you can, and hope that you get noticed and you get that break.
Mm. Well, you brought up the Florida independent scene.
It sucks.
I don't know if you would. I know that there's guys running shows. There are shows, but
yeah.
I don't know. It you see the attendance isn't what it should be considering. You know, just the people that they have booked.
Yeah,
even the,
I will say. Yeah, you know, there's not too many groups that are really running down in Florida right now, and there's really not a lot of groups that are running successfully. There's only a couple, like FXC Wrestling, which is a training school here in Orlando. They're starting to run shows now once a month, and they're pretty smart about the way they do it. They got a good building, got a good setup. They just ran a show last weekend, and they actually had a good crowd of over a couple, I think it was over 200, 250, maybe it was a little bit more than that even. So, I mean, they're doing solid for, you know, that's their expectation for a show like that. I mean, that's good business for them.
Was it a
like they're running
show?
A, But they bring in some other guys too. Like they'll use not only just students, but they'll use other, you know, indie wrestlers from around the area too.
On
so
top. That's cool.
You know, like Kenny King's on that, Ricky Reyes. Yeah, you know. So yeah, you know what part of the problem is too with some indies is it's like you want to go out there, you want to put as much talent as possible, so spend money flying guys in, you know, but you can't bring in a lot of different guys because you look at it and say, okay, I'm bringing in, you know, whoever, but how many tickets is he really going to sell me? What kind of value am I going to get out of that? They overspend on their budget because you got to pay the guy, you got to fly him in, you got to pay for his hotel. It's just like, you know, it's great to say that I had such and such on my card, but okay, what did he mean to me come, you know, bottom line? You know, did I make money off the show because I brought so-and-so in and, you know, he sold me an extra X amount of tickets, you know? So use the talent that you've got in your area. You know, if you search, you know, enough and you've got a good area, you know, you can find guys that can work. You can put together a solid show, you know? I'm not saying everybody's going to be this great worker, because obviously that's not going to happen. But you try to go out there and find the best guys you can and try to budget yourself and do a smart show. There's too many people right now that run shows. They're not smart about the way that they run it. And they wouldn't,
Frank,
you know,
Goodman.
That's a perfect example. You know, Frank Goodman, man, he's running shows down here. And Frank's crazy, man. He's running these damn shows, and they're going 4 hours long. They got 12 matches on. Let me tell you, man, if you're a freaking promoter and you're running shows right now, why are you putting on 12 matches that are going on for 4 hours, and come the end of the night, everybody's just going to, the people that stick around, they're going to be moaning and groaning because they're going to be like, God, the show went on forever.
And it's not TV.
You know?
It's not a TV taping.
Right. You know what? People, they're not going to be entertained by that. They're not going to get their value. You could say, oh, we got to get that, you know, they're paying X amount of money, you know, for come to the show. No. Put on a show that goes two and a half hours. You've got 6 or 7 matches. That's all you need. That is all you need. People can go out there. They have a good time. They have fun. They go home. You know what? They're not drained by the end of the night because the show went on forever. They didn't leave early because they're saying, I can't stick around anymore, or whatever, you know. And then on top of that, here's another practice that guys have to stop doing, okay? If somebody comes up to you and you're a promoter and they say, hey, man, we want to be on the show tonight. You know, we've wrestled a little bit, you know, or we come from whatever school. We'll pay to be on the show. Okay, no, you're not getting on the show. You can't let guys say, I want to be on the show so bad, I will pay to be on the show, because that means they suck and they're not worth anything, okay? They have no value, and it's just going to be a blemish on your show, because that's happened at a Goodman show a couple of times. I went to a show one time where these guys, at a Frank Goodman show, at the Central Florida Fairgrounds, we're doing spots off the top of the side building that they have out there, coming off the building, which is 10 feet high or 12 feet high, wherever the hell it is, and they're coming off through tables. And it's amazing that one of these guys, if not both, didn't get killed. And I asked somebody, I go, how much did those guys get paid to do the show tonight? And they're like, oh, they paid Frank to be on. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Horrible. That's horrible. We don't have the ticket seller issue out here. You know, the talent pool out here, it's there's more depth as far as talent, in-ring actual talent, but there aren't as many guys out here.
Right.
And there are, you know, we our scene is coming back. It was gone for some years, and it's coming back. And what happens is there are some training schools out here, and what happens is these kids are trained, then they work on these student shows for the companies that are, you know, teaching them. So the companies that have schools, they run their own little small shows, and then they advance to, quote-unquote, go out on their own, and they get booked on these other shows, and then you work your way up. And what they do is they bring in a couple out-of-town guys to put on top, or they're local big stars or whatnot. And, I mean, a few weeks ago, I was at a show for my sponsor, Fog City Wrestling, and there were 5 shows that night in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I can't remember the last time that happened. And
yeah, but that's amazing that not only are there five shows, but guys all booking on the same night. It's like,
You know, and everybody drew 250 that night.
Well, if everybody's drawing, then, you know, God bless them. You know, normally it doesn't work out that way where, you know, if there's more than one show within, you know, a 50-mile radius, you know, that could be bad news for one of them.
Yeah, there were a lot of guys working doubles. You know, we had guys at the opening match, and then they drive 30 miles, and they come in hitting the main event at this other show. It's like, you know what, dude, welcome to indie wrestling.
Yeah, you know what, the only way I can see, like, shows a lot of times working where you're booked on the same day is if it's an afternoon show and then a night show, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, this one...
If it worked out there, you know, then that means somebody's doing something right now.
This one was... These two guys, they were in the opening match of this Lucha show, and it was started at 5, so they got in the ring at 5. They were packed up and ready to leave about 5:30, so they made the drive back out to San Francisco.
Yeah, hold on. You mean there was an independent show that actually started on time?
Yes, sir. We actually start on time. We start on time out here in the Bay Area.
That never happens here.
Of course not. Of course not. Of course not. So, Mr. Fritz, have you ever been out here to San Francisco?
I've never been to San Francisco. I have been to Los Angeles for one quick weekend one time to hang out with a friend, and that's it. I'd love to go back out there because I'm a huge Lakers fan. I've been watching them in the playoff run so far, squashing the Denver Nuggets. So I'd love to come back out to California at some point.
Cool. Well, you'll have to come on out for Pro Wrestling Guerrilla's Battle of Los Angeles one year.
Yeah, I keep hearing so many great things about that show, man. I mean, the whole weekend, I'd love to get out there for something like that sometime.
Well, they just go all out.
Sure.
You know, that's their WrestleMania. And, you know, they scour the world to bring in talent. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm really thinking about going down this time because I'm in Northern California. And,
right.
And, you know, I have a family and whatnot, so it's kind of tough to, you know, get on the road. You know, I've got to really plan ahead, and I'm really thinking about disappearing for that weekend. But
yeah,
but
it was funny because
if I can only share a room with Brian and Vinny, I'll be okay.
Oh, there you go, man. Hey, jump on
a
little bandwagon, baby. So I know, you know, it's funny with a weekend like that, man. I remember when Mania just came to town. There was so many different things going on with them and Ring of Honor and TNA and all that stuff, and I was planning all this different stuff and I was going to go to. I was sitting there thinking, like, I'm going to hate wrestling after this weekend. I'm just going to absolutely hate it because it's going to be like an overkill, you know? And I didn't. I mean, there was some really good stuff here. I got lucky with that, you know, because of the Ric Flair stuff for the most part, too. But I was so worried that I was going to hate wrestling after that weekend. So I think I've proved to myself now that, like, okay, there can be some stuff where you can go for multiple days in a row and still not be sick of it. So, you know, for something like Battle of Los Angeles, I think that would be something pretty good to go to.
Well, they bring in – the talent is so diverse. They bring in the Dragon Gate guys, which are just amazing. If you've never seen the Dragon Gate guys, these guys are – okay.
They Ring of Honor brought Dragon Gate down here when they just came.
They're just I can't even explain the Dragon Gate style. It's like bees in a beehive. They're just like all over the place. Can't watch more than two of their matches at a time or my head starts spinning. But I do love their product. That's fun. They're bringing in Nigel, if I remember right, Danielson. You know, so they're going to have more of the technical European type, and then they have, you know, the stronger style. It's a really good mix. But enough of putting them over. It's been announced today. Dave has dropped this news on his site that at least on the Blu-ray DVD release for WrestleMania, they're going to have the complete Hall of Fame ceremony.
Mm.
That's good news.
That's very good news. And to be honest with you, none of us will ever see the true full version of the Hall of Fame because Ric Flair didn't get to finish his speech, and he still had about 20 minutes to go.
Well, from what I hear, he finished it in the bar.
Probably. So down in the airport Marriott bar that you had to be staying at the hotel to be able to get into the parking lot of even, and the WWE had that whole hotel on lockdown because they had every room rented for wrestlers, families, Make-A-Wish Foundation kids and their families, production people, office management. They had the entire hotel. I mean, you couldn't even get – literally, you couldn't get into the parking lot of the hotel unless you proved that you were staying there and you had to show your room key pass, or you were important enough to where someone from up on high in WWE got you through, because otherwise security was out there and they'd be like, turn around, go, go, can't come in.
That's insane. That's just nuts how they can just lock down, you know, a whole city block like that.
I was hoping to actually go. There was a couple of people I was actually going to meet with, and we were planning on meeting like at the bar or the restaurant there in the Marriott, and we had been planning this leading up to WrestleMania when guys were going to be in town, and once that happened, I knew it just like, okay, we're either not going to meet, we're not going to meet there. Because I know that I'm not going to be able to get in. And they didn't have the stroke to, like, get me in there, you know. So, but, I mean, that's, you know, WWE has to do that now to some extent. Because can you imagine if they let anybody get in there and word got out where they were staying?
No, man, it would have been a madhouse.
That happened in New York City. I went to WrestleMania 20, and word started getting out where the guys were staying. And they didn't have that hotel on lockdown. So, I mean, there's just a lobby full of people trying to get autographs and whatever, and they'd see somebody, and they'd all be screaming, and they'd be running through the lobby and running everywhere, and the wrestlers would be, like, scurrying to get on the elevator and go up to the rooms or whatever. So it was a madhouse.
Well, you know, the boys, they really don't dig it when, you know, when fans come up to them like that. I mean, I spent plenty of time, you know, with the boys after shows and whatnot, and in the hotel-type setting, in the hotel bar-type setting, and they seem to like it when you walk up and you're calm and you introduce yourself, you know, maybe even buy him a drink or whatever, and then you have a conversation, you know, they are people. They're people. Just like you, just like me, they're people. They just happen to be on TV every Monday and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And
yeah, everybody's got to have their own personal time, you know, and, yeah, they're going to go out of their way, like, a lot of times to do things for fans and sign autographs and do whatever, but at the same time, man, they need to have their own little personal time. So, you know, you see people going nuts like that. It's a crazy scene to see, you know, what it is now when it comes to wrestling, especially WWE, and how big it is, and, you know, the stars that they become, you know, and just it's to a point now with some of those guys where, you know, they can't even go out in public, you know, without getting mobbed. They can't go out to the grocery store. They can't, you know, do the simple things in life that you know, we take for granted, because if they go out in public, they just have to know, like, I know that people are going to be coming up to me and wanting autographs and pictures. And some of the guys, I mean, they're cool with that for the most part, but they just know that they have to expect that their wives are going to be different than what they were before they got with WWE.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to be walking down the street when you look like Dave Bautista. You know, obviously.
Very true.
him and the Big Show kind of stand out a little bit.
Just a little bit. You know, I mean, John Cena's the guy that I'll bet John can't go anywhere without just tons of people coming up to him.
Well, I need your personal opinion. Do you think that Cena has used anything in the past?
I don't know. I think with John, I'm trying to say, well, let me think here. John's a guy that's very open about some stuff, and he swore that he's never used steroids. Now, there's two ways to look at it. You can say, okay, the guy's been totally clean, and he hasn't. Or you can look at it from the standpoint of, you know, maybe he hasn't done steroids, but he's done something. He's done growth. He's done some HGH. And guys will say, it's not steroids, it's human growth. You know, but obviously it's, you know, a performance-enhancing drug. Because I've never heard him say, I've never done a performance-enhancing drug, but I've heard him say, I've never done steroids. So
good point.
That being said, you know, seeing John from back in the day, you know, even before he got into WWE and, you know, he started working out there in California.
He was always ripped when he was the prototype out here in
New
York. He was always a big guy.
He's always been huge. He's got to have some kind of amazing genetics. I mean, he's always been a big guy. He's always been heavy in the fitness. You know what? I'll take John at his word. When he says he hasn't done anything, I'll take him at his word. He's like one of the few guys I would actually do that with. Now, if it was proved that he actually was on something, I would not be shocked. But at the same time, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, you know. But that will, you know, only go until, you know, we find out if anything else is proved about him and it said, hey, you know what, he did do something, then, you know, then he did something, you know. And I'm not going to be shocked, and I'm not going to be like, oh, how dare that guy do that, you know. So I'm not the biggest fan of the guys doing it, but it happens. I understand it, and I've, you know, accepted it, you know. I mean, I'm not going to take a moral high ground on it, you know. But, you know, I'm not really too worried about it. I don't think too many others are, too. I mean, I think the biggest thing would be how was he able to come back from that surgery as quickly as he was, as he did. And I think he said in interviews that it was a huge risk. I believe his doctor said it's a huge risk. Obviously it is, but, you know, the guy does not want to miss out on events for wrestling, especially when it comes to WrestleMania. He doesn't want to miss out on being on part of that big event. He doesn't want to miss out on probably getting that big paycheck, too, you know. So, and I can't blame the guy.
I have to agree. And, you know, the guy is dedicated, you know, and he used to bring his own meat with him, you know, on the road.
Right.
You know, I think that he would, like you, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
With John, you know what, I will say this. I know there's a lot of people that are mixed on him when it comes to, you know what, the boom, you know, and they give him crap when it comes out there or whatever. But, man, I'll tell you what, there's nobody that's more dedicated to the wrestling business. Mm-hmm. There's nobody that has more passion for it. There's not a better representative of the company for it.
Exactly.
Because the way that how professional that he acts both in and out of the ring. When this guy goes out there and he's part of a show, he busts his ass. He does everything that he can. You know, some people say, oh, the guy still can't wrestle. Well, he's not as bad of a wrestler as you might think. You know, I'm not saying that he's going to be this technical guru, but the guy has solid matches, and a lot of times he's had better than solid matches. I mean, he's had some great matches out there with Shawn Michaels and even some with Triple H and with Chris Jericho. And I mean, the guy can work, okay? And he goes out there, he puts on a hell of a show, he busts his hump, and if some of these other guys would have the kind of passion that you would have, you know, I would think that they would be better off for it, too. Now, mind you, he's getting a huge opportunity, and guys aren't always going to get that kind of opportunity when it comes to time-wise or whatever. But, you know, he puts his heart and soul in everything. And this is a guy that literally almost got cut from WWE years ago. And because, you know, they just didn't see it in him. But he kept working at it. He kept working at it. And he finally got that break, you know, and he's made the most of it. And not only in the ring, but outside the ring, because the guy's smart. He's well-spoken. He, you know, dedicates every moment of his life towards the wrestling business. And I'm not saying everybody has to do that, but, you know, the guy just loves what he does. And you can see it out there. And, you know, for anybody to be down on him saying, oh, this guy sucks, though he doesn't. I mean, I wish there was more guys in WWE that were like him and put that much work into what they do and were as dedicated as John was, or John is.
Well, yeah, his work ethic is insane. I mean, not just the road. I mean, not just the work. I mean, the PR he does, the interviews, the TV, all that stuff. I mean, the charities, all that stuff. I mean, this guy is on the road constantly. He does not have a life. He gets up.
And
in the
I'm
morning,
not saying that somebody
trains.
Has to come up with that kind of schedule, because obviously that kind of schedule is, you know, absurd. You know, but that just adds to, like, the lore and the legacy of John Cena, you know. And like I said, I'm not saying that somebody has to spend every waking moment, you know, doing, you know, PR appearances and charity and whatever. But, you know, it's nice to see. I mean, a lot of the guys there do a lot of charity. But, you know, he puts a lot of thought in everything that he does. He spends a lot of time on everything. And if guys, you know, and he does it because he enjoys it. And I think some other people, they put some time into different things because they're obligated to, but I don't think they enjoy it as much. They don't get as much out of it as John does. And that's another thing that makes it so special for him, is that he enjoys it so much, and you can see that.
Well, Mr. Fritz, I got to kick you off the air. Your hour
is up. Absolutely no problem.
And I do really appreciate you coming on at such short notice and covering my back. I really appreciate it. BetweenTheRopes.com, sign up. It's what, $3.99 a month?
$3.95 a month for 6 months for $19.95.
Man, and all those archives. Today's Watchword Children archives.
There,
Mr. Fritz, next time we're going to have you and Vito on at the same time, have a little verbal debate, if we can get him off the couch.
Maybe we could do something like that. And in the meantime, I'm off to watch Lost.
Oh, awesome. Oh, it is. It is. Is it time, or do you have a DVR'd?
Oh, it's DVR'd. You got to be kidding me. I DVR
no
so many programs. Ridiculous.
Okay, Brian, thanks for coming on again, brother. I will post a link for this to be downloaded on your message board once again at BetweenTheRopes.com. We're all about chilling here. So thanks again, brother, and I will be talking to you very soon.
Sounds good, man. I'll catch up with you later.
All right. Thanks, brother. Okay. That was the world-famous and kind of sexy, not quite sexy, but kind of sexy, Brian Fritz from BetweenTheRopes.com. That was one hell of a discussion. We're at the halftime mark, so what we're going to do is I am going to run down the sponsors, FogCityWrestling.com. If you're anywhere in Northern California and you dig independent pro wrestling, Fog City's for you. And the second spot would have to be WrestleWarehouse.com. For all your wrestling DVD needs, Lucha Libre masks. Jeff's got a really neat selection of masks, T-shirts, SoCal Pro DVDs, all kinds of other stuff, WrestleWarehouse.com. And I think on the line I may have the pimp daddy himself, Mike Sawyer. Michael, good evening.
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
Ah, man. I after an hour with Fritz, I'm blown up.
I heard some of it. Fritz is a good man. I had the pleasure of spending that weekend last year when they had the little convention with Brian, and we hit scores, and we had a MMA show. He's a very fine man.
Oh, wow. I was waiting for Ed to call in from San Antonio, man. I'm blowing up. I'm like, I'm waiting for the hot tag. I'm like, come on, Ed. Come on, Ed. And he takes
Yeah, I'm surprised. He loves Fritz.
Actually,
he loves Brian. I'm surprised he didn't call in.
This is a shoot. This is the truth. Before the show, I sent a text message to Mr. Ed, and I asked him, hey, man, be my guest co-host tonight. These are your boys. You can do it. And then he texts me back. He says, I don't think so, because Brian and Mike both talk a lot, so I'm not going to be able to get a word in edgewise. I said, no, okay.
Is that the secret of keeping Ed away?
I guess it is.
If that's the secret, I got to write this down.
So, for Tough Talk, who runs the board? I got to know this.
That's Oliver.
That's Ollie, okay.
That's Ollie from Germany, yeah.
Tremendous. Tremendous. Well, let's start at the top. Caleb, I'm a bitch, Starnes. What is with that kid?
Yeah, that was pretty bad, man. That was about as bad as you're going to get. I mean, Nate Quarry was awesome. Absolutely awesome in that fight. His little Rocky thing at the end was great. If he disrespected Caleb for what Caleb was doing, you know, late in that third round, you know, Caleb deserved it. Because that was, that's as bad as it gets. I mean, Caleb should retire. You know, he should hang it up and probably be, you know, never seen again. It doesn't get any worse than that. I mean, the guy ran for three rounds. The funniest part is he's running when, you know, Nate Quarry is blinding him, putting the arm across his face and throwing the wicked, you know, the little jabs out there, and he's running from that. And, you know, he just embarrassed himself. It doesn't get any worse than that. He was better off getting his head kicked off in the first round.
Yeah, I have to agree. But we do have a caller. What's up, Ed?
I just heard, like, a request for me to call in here. My first question for Mike is, how many pills have you popped tonight?
Was that for me?
Yes.
Kayfabe, I can't.
How many tonight, Ed?
Yeah.
Actually, I did pop a Loratab about 20 minutes ago, so I'm at one.
Okay, so you're being a good boy today, huh?
Well, it's early. It's 8 o'clock, you know.
Oh, that's right.
I'm being a good boy. Yeah, I can't. I'm getting too old to be abusing myself. Now, I may change my mind in about an hour and a half, but right now I'm at one.
Is this the geriatric show, Mike, or what? Us old-timers here?
It is old-timers with Fritz and I think Ed. What are you, 36, Ed?
Yeah, I'm 36, and I know Fritz is 35.
Jeez, I'm
oh, shit.
35.
Well, I'm the old man, I guess. I'm living like it, too, let me tell you.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No. What's going on, Ed?
Not too much, man. Why don't you tell everybody about that the mixed martial arts show you're going to help sponsor on in May?
Yeah, we got I got three health food stores down here in Vegas that I, you know, kind of run, and they're going to be sponsoring the Tough Enough May 23rd at the Tropicana, and for everybody that comes down for the Figure Four convention that Ed is having, I think what do you got, Ed? About 20 guys?
At least 25 for sure. I don't know if everyone's gonna. Everyone won't be making like every event, but it should be like about 25 altogether. Hazy's co-host will be there. Too bad he's not on the show tonight. But yeah, man, 25 at least. And, well, that's, you know, including you, and that's hopefully the cancer's not booked yet, but hopefully he'll be able to do it pretty soon, and hopefully he'll be there, and we'll have representation from all the Blood Talk shows except for Sky Kid. Sky Kid will be the only one who won't be there.
Is it?
Well, that'll be good,
underage?
Man. What's that?
Is he underage? How old is the Sky Kid?
he's of age, but he's still pretty young, and he's in New York, so he's not.
Okay.
I don't think Vegas is his thing, so he's not gonna make it this year. But we'll have K-Fay for Dummies. We'll have a Tough Talk, and we'll have Rubber Guard Radio all represented, along with Brian and Vinny, and along with Brian Fritz from Between the Ropes. So it's kind of like a little get together of all the wrestling shows that are relevant right now.
Irrelevant.
Irrelevant.
Relevant. Hear that, Robert? We're fucking relevant. Pardon me. I had to get that off my chest. So what did you guys think of the UFC show this past Saturday?
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, the crowd was hot. You know, they had like 22,000 people, first time in Canada. You know, it wasn't a bad show. I got a chance. I worked that night, but I had a chance to watch pretty much all the fights. And, you know, I went on Brian's show and said, you know, it was good to bet on the underdog in this, and I don't think an underdog won a fight.
No.
So, although, Ed, I didn't bet that money that you wanted me to bet, so you don't owe me anything.
Oh, that's cool. That saves me a whole $10, so.
Yeah,
At those lines, Mike, how can you not put any money down?
Yeah, well, tell me about it.
Fuck.
Yeah. Any of those fights could have went to the underdog, and, you know, it was a good show. The crowd definitely made it, and the main event went about as, you know, what everybody thought was going to happen, and it was a good show.
Did you guys see the undercard at all?
Some of the fights, yeah.
Yeah, that was some good stuff. The Sam Stout Clemente fight, that was the fight of the night. That was
back and forth, right?
War. Yeah, it was just a three round war, and it was Clemente got the decision, but it wasn't a good decision. But
no, I took good pleasure in seeing Ed Herman get choked.
Oh, I can't stand that guy. I can't stand him.
He was out. He got the shit kicked out of him there at the end.
You know, what's about Rich Clemente is that he's going to be fighting in May. He's going to be fighting on the 24th, man, after that fight.
No, there's no
Yeah, he's
way.
Coming back, what, next month? Is it Stout or Clemente?
Clemente. He's Rob Emerson pulled out of his fight, so Rich Clemente is taking his place, and he's going to be fighting Edom or Edom.
That'll be at the show we're at.
Yeah, the show we're at. It'll be like he's taking a fight within like four. That's pretty close to be, you know, having a second fight. You know, that's pretty amazing that he's actually doing that.
It was nice to see Herman humbled, though. It was. I took great pleasure in watching Ed Herman get humbled and, choked unconscious. It made me happy.
So,
and Caleb Starnes, too, it was funny. They had posted something up on the board about him. I actually did see him at Walmart maybe a month ago, and he was with his boy, his Team Dagger boy, and he was buying tampons. So it pretty much carried over to the fight and how he acted. So, and he's a Cobra Kai guy, so. Yeah. True story.
That's a drop. That's a drop right there. We're going to have to
end. Yeah.
That's a drop.
True story. He's a Mark Lehman student, and anybody that pretty much follows the game knows that once you hook up with him, you're in trouble, and you're going to go on a losing streak, and you know, this is a pretty good example of what happens when you're with Lehman.
Any more questions, Ed? I'm going to give you one more question, then I'm going to cut you off because I'm going to grill Mr. Sawyer myself.
No problem. Do you really think that this is going to be Tito's last match in the UFC? Do you think that he'll if he wins, they'll keep him around? Do you think it could be worked out?
I think something could be worse. I mean, him, Dana and him hate each other. How much of it is legit? You know, there's some that's legit. Now, Tito, I know this week signed a sponsorship deal with Mickey's, which is part of the Miller Brewing Company, which is a competitor of the Anheuser-Busch and Bud Light brand that the UFC goes with. So, you know, either way, if it's his last fight in the UFC, which I don't see him beating Lyoto Machida, he can go to Elite XC, he can go to, Cuban, he can go anywhere he wants, and it'll be a good pickup for whoever gets him.
Oh, yeah, maybe we could see a rematch between him and Frank. But, I'll let you guys go, man. You guys take it easy. Talk to you later, Mike.
Take it
awesome.
Easy.
Thanks for calling in, Ed. Wow, that was Mr. in San Antonio. Thanks for calling in, Ed.
I knew he couldn't stay away long.
I didn't even have to text him. He's listening, so.
Yeah, I told him, I texted him that Brian was going to be on the show, and, he's in love with him, so I knew he'd be listening.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, Tito, I don't see him coming back because, to be honest, he's useless. As far as the UFC is concerned, he's done. There's nothing left for him to do with the UFC. I mean, other than Rampage, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, the whole thing with Tito is, him and Dana go back and forth, obviously in the press. I think, those that are a little closer, a lot of it's a work. But here's the thing. He gets choked out by Machida, he's done. If he beats Lyoto Machida, boy, he's going to be up for some negotiations with Dana now. I mean, Machida's an undefeated fighter on the way up, and, Dana will – that'll be a big headache to see. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't think he's going to be able to do it. I think his fighting days are behind him, honestly. I think he had a great career. He was a big draw for them, one of the big, top five draws, without a doubt, for the company, and now he's got Jenna Jameson, and you know, they got a movie coming out, the strippers. What is it, zombie strippers or something?
Zombie strippers, yeah, buddy.
Zombie strippers.
Yeah, buddy.
They were actually showing a trailer of it the other night when I went to the movies. It was up, but, you know, he's got other things going on. He was on the Celebrity Apprentice, and, you know, he'll find his way. He's got the successful clothing line, and he's got his gym. There'll always be something for Tito. He's not going to go away for some time.
Well, you know, he'll pop his head up somewhere, somehow, some way. You never know. He may end up in New York, but it wouldn't surprise me.
No.
But because I could see, you know, Vince maybe finally show, you know, moving into the MMA type of company, a division type of thing with Tito on top.
Well, you know, not only that, I mean, Tito's got a good relationship with TNA, too.
True.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, he's a huge wrestling mark. I mean, he grew up idolizing Hogan. You know, I'm sure I think Vince was on Celebrity Apprentice. I'm not sure if it was the same show Tito was on, but I'm pretty sure they have talked, and, you know, Tito's very marketable in anything he does. They don't even have, they can use him once or twice a year, maybe even, and pretty much they can use him for interviews and talk. He's, you know, hey man, like I said, I think his fighting days are over. Unless he proves me wrong, he's had a bad back now for many years. Didn't just happen last year or the year before. His back's been shot for at least 5 years. So, you know, but Tito's charismatic, and he'll find something. It'd be nice to see him up there with Vince or even with TNA. I mean, it might make me watch it once in a while.
How about Tito working a program with, say, Joe or Angle?
You know, anything would be good for TNA.
With that UWFI type style that those two used at the last pay per view, that more realistic MMA, well, not MMA based, but influence style. I think it may work.
It worked at least for those two. I mean, those two, but you got to remember, those two had a good year of matches, and were used to working with each other. They brought Frank Trigg in, who I thought did an excellent job. Is commentating on the show. I think Tito and that could do it. I mean, anything, like I said, for TNA, which I think I've seen maybe two shows in the last year, anything would be good. I mean, Tito versus Ed from San Antonio would probably be interesting to make me watch anything that I'm watching when I turn that on. But I think an MMA-style match could work, and you had Angle and Joe, and I thought that was a great match.
Okay, on June 21st at the Pearl in Vegas, you have the Ultimate Fighter finale. On the show, we have Ken DeGrove against Evan Tanner. And Mr. Meltzer is saying that, quote, unquote, I got this from figure4online.com, by the way, quote, unquote, special double secret stipulations. What do you think? Loser leaves town?
Well, obviously, yeah. It'll be a loser leave town, or maybe Evan's got to give up his weed. One of the two. That could be a special stipulation for that. But, you know, obviously, you know, it'll be two losses for Evan. It'll be two or three for Kendall Grove. So the loser's pretty much done. And it'll break my heart if it's Evan Tanner. He's such a great guy. He's fun to watch. Got a great website. It's a good story. They should have had him on The Ultimate Fighter. And, you know, hopefully he can beat Kendall Grove. It might be another, you know, I think he can. We'll see. I mean, Kendall's been a lot more active, but it would break my heart to see Evan Tanner out of the UFC.
Well, if Tanner can get in close, he has a chance. Because Grove has those sick-looking arms and legs that are just so goddamn long and those sick elbows. But I hope that Evan gets in there and just beats the living fuck out of him. I cannot stand Kendall Grove either.
It's going to be tough. Grove is a tough matchup for the style for Tanner. Grove is a very lanky guy. He's decent off his back. You know, hopefully Evan trains properly. I know he is. He was living out here in Vegas. You know, hopefully he puts it all together. I'd really like to see a big win for him. And we can get rid of another one of the alumni there. Get rid of Kendall Grove. He can go back to Hawaii and train like he wants to.
There you go.
Yeah.
He'll go back and roll around with BJ Penn, which, you know, I don't have.
Which is a plus.
Yeah, but I don't think it could help his attitude and his outlook. You know, he was just a prick on the show, and he's been a prick on the mic. He's been a prick in interviews, and it's not like it. You know, it's not like he's trying to play a character because he comes off as genuinely being a dick. And I can't respect that because I honestly feel that he doesn't respect the game. You know, I get that.
He's talking about to Grove, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, Grove was, Grove's, I've seen him out here a few times. He was training with Tito. He loves Tito. They had a nice little thing over there in California. And, you know, you get to see, living out here, you get to see everybody. That's one of the things about Vegas. You never know who you're going to run into. And, you know, which is usually a pleasant experience. I haven't had too many negative ones, but, you know, it'd be nice to see him humbled and sent home. But we'll see. We'll see what Evan brings on that day.
Well, any Frank Mir sightings?
I did see Frank. I saw Frank... a couple of weeks ago, I went and did a club run when, you know, checking out and see how many people were in some of the other clubs. And, you know, obviously, they, you know, you got to kind of hide in there. They know me at the Rhino. But, you know, you got to sneak in at the right time or they'll toss you out if they know you're from an opposing club. And as soon as you walk in, there's Mr. Mirror right to the right. He works the Rhino room, looking big as ever. And, you know, I've had a few run-ins with Frank, but, you know, I'm glad to see he's back on a winning streak. I'm happy for him. I was always a fan of Frank Mir. If he trained and actually took it serious, I mean, he's very, very dangerous off his back. He's got great jiu-jitsu. You know, I'm pulling for him. It's a good comeback story for what happened to him. But he's going to have to pick up the training. I mean, it's hard to work in these clubs with the smoke and the alcohol and the shit that goes on in there. And, you know, you're there till 5, 6 in the morning, and then you decide you're going to train for a fight for 2 weeks. You know, it's rough. You got to go a little longer than that. And Frank usually takes about 2-3 weeks to train for his fights.
Well, there's a reason he's a heavyweight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's a big guy. Frank is a big man.
Big guy. So yeah. What's next for Frank? Maybe a contender type fight, and then why the hell not?
I don't think so. I think they're going to give him Nogueira. I think at UFC 85. I think that's one of the rumored things with Liddell out with the hamstring injury. I think the rumored is Frank is going to get the title shot.
Wow.
He's supposed to be fighting Justin McCauley. But I think that fight was actually taken off UFC.com, and I think it was taken, you know. I think they might just throw him in with Nogueira, try to save that card with Liddell off of it. I know they're trying to put together Bisping and Chris Lieben as another fight on that show, you know. So if you could put
–
yeah, I mean, if you could put Mir – I mean, nothing's going to replace Chuck as far as, you know, they've already sold it out, so it doesn't matter. But nothing's going to replace Chuck – as far as the buy rate. But as far as, you know, the loyal fans, if you can see Nogueira and Frank and, you know, Lieben and Bisping, I mean, it's something. So, you know, if they can put that together, it's definitely going to help that card out.
I have to agree. That's going to be fun. And I wouldn't touch that line at all. Nogueira and Mir, I wouldn't touch it.
No.
That's just one fight that I couldn't, you know, even put a dollar on. Just it's anything can happen, and that's the perfect example of what MMA is nowadays. Anything can happen. You know, it could be the hands, it could be a tap. I mean, it could be fucking anything with these two guys. I mean, they could hump for 5 rounds. You know,
it would be a very slow hump with Frank.
Yes.
It would be a very slow hump. You got the number one and number two guys in Brazilian jiu-jitsu as far as the heavyweight division goes. You know, Nogueira obviously can go the 5 rounds. He can take a pounding. He always finds a way to win. Yeah, and then some. And I mean, he always finds a way to win. Mir is probably the most dangerous heavyweight in under 3 minutes there is. You know, he is dangerous in that first round. He can catch anybody. He's strong, and he doesn't just, you know, he doesn't try to catch you to submit you. He wants to break you. So he gets a hold of you. You get a little fear in you knowing that a guy wants to break your arm or leg like that. And that's going to be interesting to see, especially on the feet. It's going to be an interesting fight. And it's a huge comeback story for Frank, who had the motorcycle accident. So, you know, I'll be pulling for him. I've bashed him in the past. I've interviewed him, and everything. But I've bashed Frank in the past, but I would like to see him win. It'd be a nice story.
Well, that, and it'll mix things up, you know, which is
exactly
always good, which is always
exactly
good for the sport. Well, the rumors, they're trying to put together Bisping and Leben. Do you think Leben is going to be the man to knock the asshole out of Bisping, his attitude?
I would love to see it. I would love to see it. You know, Chris Leben's a guy with heavy hands. He can take a pounding as well. You know, maybe he's the kind of guy for Bisping. Bisping doesn't have the best chin in the world. So, you know, that could be the first, although Bisping did look, even though I can't stand the guy, he did look pretty good at 185.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, obviously he was fighting Charles McCarthy, who actually announced his retirement today.
No,
off the heels of off the loss, yeah. So he's retired. He's gone. I think he's going to be teaching at his Boca MMA facility, which is like a American Top Team affiliate. But I would love to see Leben knock him out.
Well, if Bisping gets through Leben, then that's his. Leben is his gatekeeper, and that'll bring him, you know, up towards the top. Maybe with Franklin, or get him close to Silva. Who's going to be the one to stop Anderson Silva? I personally think it's going to be GSP, but that's just me because I don't see any other UFC middleweight being able to come in and take out Anderson. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Anderson's going to be the only guy that can beat himself at this point. Well, I think if Bisping wins, they give him Franklin, and then I think Bisping gets annihilated. I don't think he's ready for Rich. I'm not saying Franklin's all that great, but at this point, I don't think Bisping. I don't think that's a good matchup for him. And then what do you do? You get. I do not want to see Rich Franklin and Anderson Silva again.
No, it's not fair to Rich.
It's or his family.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's not fair to anybody.
Doctor, but it may be fair for his doctor and his plastic surgeon, but just
that's
not
right
fair to his family.
It'll be fair for his pocket, but you know, I mean, he will get annihilated again. It's a horrendous matchup for him. I really thought Dan Henderson was going to beat Anderson Silva. I was shocked that he gets submitted. I'll never go against Anderson Silva again. Maybe the best pound-for-pound guy. As far as GSP goes, you know, GSP's looked awesome. He doesn't want to stand anymore with anybody. Phenomenal wrestler. You know, he took Koscheck down, who's just great at will. Matt Hughes, he dominated. Sarah, he dominated. And, you know, I mean, he's not standing-wise, he's going to get killed. I don't think he'll want to stand with Anderson Silva. The thing is, with Silva, though, Silva's very lazy at times. His takedown defense is very, very lazy, but he's very dangerous off his back. So I don't think anyone – I don't see Anderson Silva losing the rest of this year.
Do you see anybody out there that's – I'm not going to say free agent, but not signed to UFC that they could maybe bring in, maybe Lindland?
Oh, no, Lindland would get his ass kicked.
Mm-hmm.
He'd get his ass kicked. Maybe a Jake Shields, who's an Elite XC, maybe something like that. But there's, you know, right now he's at the top of his game.
Jake is 170. I think Jake is the one guy that could put a hurting on GSP. And as far as Silva, this is just because I'm from the Bay Area. I would love to see Anderson Silva in the Shark Tank defending that title against Kung Lee. But that's just me. That would give me a personal hard on, because you
know,
Kung Lee's the big dog now. You know, he knocked Frank off of his throne. Now this is Kung Lee's house.
I'll tell you that really, I was really disappointed with that too. It really broke my heart to see Shamrock get his ass kicked. As a guy who sponsors Baroni, it really broke me up.
I think it's time for Frank to move behind the camera and, you know, and go commentate and, you know, help with the office stuff as far as Strikeforce is concerned. There's only the one fight left, and that's Ken. And I think that's going to be the next one. They're going to do another 18,000 people house again at the Shark Tank, and that's the last money fight as far as Strikeforce is concerned.
He probably has three fights remaining that would draw huge. Obviously, a rematch with Kung Lee would get the interest up. And you got the match with Ken. And then if Tito Ortiz goes over there. Those would be his big fights.
What weight would it be?
It would have to be a catch weight, you know, probably... you know, Tito walks around 225 normally. So they'd have to have a catch weight at maybe 200.
Wow.
You know, 195, 200 maybe. That would be a big fight too.
You know, I think that would be a money fight out here. Tito in the large Hispanic community of San Jose. That's money. That's money. Someone needs to inform Strikeforce that that's the money fight.
I think they know. I think they're eyeing Tito for sure. I think they would believe me. I think Tito's washed up as a fighter, unless maybe he breaks up with Jenna and totally dedicates himself. But his back is shot. His back is in bad shape, but, you know, Tito's a competitor, but that would be a huge fight. Anywhere Tito fights is going to draw. Tito's one of the biggest rated, you know, for as far as drawing buys and rated guys in UFC history. So that would be a huge, huge rematch fight. And like I said, the Kung Lee would be big. And then Ken would be big as well. What Ken's going to be able to do, I don't know, but it'll be big.
Okay, well let's say this: Kung Lee would be first. If I were booking Strikeforce, I would put the Kung Lee fight first, and then Tito, and then Ken to end it. Let him go out either way. That way, you know, his career is full circle, and he's able to walk away, you know, with his head high and whatever. And do you think that would be the order of the fights, maybe?
Depends with the injury. I would think that Frank might fight maybe one more time this year. I don't know if they'll give him Kung right away. You know, but I think all three of those fights are going to be. I think all three will be happening by at least the end of 2009. I think you'll see Tito, Kung, and Ken against Frank, and then that'll probably be it for him.
Yeah, I don't see him going any further. He's a specimen and he's in phenomenal shape. He has great genetics, but also he's starting to break down in ways that fighters don't like to get broken down. You don't like knee injuries when you throw those monster leg kicks. So he may be actually breaking down physically.
Older. He's breaking down.
I think he's going to be in a hurry to get quote unquote get that shit in. You know.
I think he will. I think that Frank is a master promoter, and as far as building up for a fight, man, he's right up there. He is right up there, and his build up with the Baroni fight was awesome. All the stuff that he put on his website and YouTube, and it's just awesome. Awesome job on his part, and he looked great in that fight. Both guys were hurt. Baroni had his groin ripped off the bone.
Oh,
Frank was,
God.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck, man, that was not nice. That was not a pretty picture, man.
Phil had a hernia. Phil had a hernia before the fight, and then right in that opening exchange, when he threw a few knees and punches on the cage, then he ripped his groin right off the bone. So he was flat-footed, and Frank was hurt too. Both guys were hurt in that fight. And, you know, it was a war. I mean, Phil got his ass kicked that first round, got his ass kicked standing. So, but he's got, I mean, and one thing with Phil, he's got the heart of a champ. I mean, he went out in the second round and he gave it everything he had. He's not going to tap. And, that was a great fight. Great crowd heat, great everything for that. Frank is just a master promoter, and I'll look forward to watching him over the next year. I look forward to Frank's fights a lot more than I look forward to Ken's fights. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. I to be honest, I was never really a Shamrock fan. I don't know. Or a Ken fan. He just never clicked with me. I don't know why. I did like his WWE work. When he did work in the WWE, that was fun because you knew he was a shooter, but I also knew he was a trained, you know, he did some training too. You know, he was a trained wrestler, pro wrestler before, but it was, you know, something different at that time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just something different. You know, that's
yeah, I mean, that was the time when, I mean, pretty much his MMA career went out the window once he left. I mean, that return fight with Tito, he got destroyed. Just buried, and it was nice to see him up there. It was, you know, I mean, I think at the time when they brought him in, you know, they were trying to build up Vader as the shooter, this big tough guy, and they put him right away in with a program with him. And you know, Ken was fun while he was there. He was fun. I can't say I've enjoyed too much of what he's done in the last 3 years, including the win over Chemo. But you know. What can you do? The same could be said for a Tank Abbott or some of these other guys that kind of paved the way.
True. Very true. Well, let's talk about pro wrestling because you are also a pro wrestling fan. You got a chance to watch the last Joe Angle fight, match. See?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear me? I said fight.
That's right.
The last match. What did you think of it?
You know, they took a big chance doing something like that. But it worked. It was actually something that TNA actually, they told a story that you could follow, and some believed, and it worked. It was good that they finally put something together like that. I mean, you got to have a guy like Kurt Angle or Samoa Joe to get an angle like that done in TNA. But I was a fan. I was very impressed with Frank Trigg. I thought he did a great job. They got to turn Don West's microphone off.
They need to kill that guy.
They should kill him. I listen to him, and he just reminds me of a guy that has everything, and I don't know this, but he just reminds me of a guy who looks like he has everything scripted on a piece of paper and is told what to say. And anytime something exciting happens, which isn't too often, he's screaming like a lunatic. And he's terrible.
Yeah, he needs to go back to the Home Shopping Club or whatever the hell he was doing before. That
guy's
bad.
Yeah, he's really bad. But I think that kind of style could work.
Like, he brings Tanay down, who's a brilliant announcer when he's able to go out there and do what he does. Share his knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
He's brilliant. You know, in WCW, when they were using him just for, you know, the luchadors or the cruiserweight stuff, that was brilliant. Because he just, you know, he was calling what he knew. And I feel really bad for Tanay because, you know, he's really talented, but he's stuck with shit. And it's really hard to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. And it's a shame. But, well, back to Joe and Angle. Do you think that
let's talk about Tanay's. You mentioned Tanay. Tanay's actually from Vegas. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first guys to have a radio show. Out here, back in the early 90s, he used to do it from one of the casinos out here. And I actually, when I worked for WCW in the UWF, and I did the 900 hotlines and all that stuff back in the 90s, his son actually replaced me when I moved back to New York. It was actually Mike Tanay's son. But Mike is just an encyclopedia of knowledge. I mean, he's tough to look at with the facial expressions, and, you know, he looks like a big pussy, you know. But he knows his stuff, and, you know, I do feel bad for him. Anybody that's with Don West, I feel really bad for.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I can't watch the product at all. I'll admit I did get the last show, the lockdown, just because I wanted to see the Joe and Angle and the X Division match they had. Just, I'm a huge Curry Man, Mark. So, but I can't stomach it. And to be honest, I don't watch WWE either. I just can't do it. I'm not going to say I'm old school. I'm gonna quote Alex Sane on this one. I'm not old school. I'm not new school. I just like shit done right.
Yeah. I've watched probably 3 full shows when it first got on the air, and that's only because when I lived in New York, Johnny Swinger was my neighbor for a long time, and we used to train together. And, so I listened to – I watched it because he was on the opening show. That was it. And then I watched the Joe fight. In between, you know, if you're not a fan of – if you're a fan of wrestling but you don't know the TNA guys, you know, you basically turn on the TV and everything's moving so fast you have no idea what the fuck's going on. It's impossible to keep up with.
It's a shame because they have one of the best tag teams in the world, the Motor City Machine Guns, and – I can watch those guys all day from Japan, but I can't stomach their stuff in TNA. Just not because of them, not because of their work. It's just you have a 20-minute match in 3 minutes, and the people they're working with and the wacky shit that they have them doing, that's not it, man. People need to go out of their way. 01, January 1st, 2008, Motor City Machine Guns against Hidaka and Dick Togo. Match of the year, my pick for match of the year. That's what those guys are about. Going 25 minutes, putting in a tag team. It's a shame that they're not able to show what they can do.
Well, you from what I can tell and see from the limited time that I've watched, is you got a bunch of guys there who don't know how to work television.
That's very.
You got a bunch of guys who and it's not their fault. They're not given any time. You know, basically, they got to get in there. Nobody knows most of them. So they've got, a 3 minute? They got 3 minutes to go out there and do all their moves, and they want to get everything off out of the way. And everybody wants to go out there and do all their big spots, you know, and all that. And, you know, you just can't do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work.
Well, the little bit of the TV that I've caught,
I've noticed some of the guys, excuse me, that didn't come from New York, that came from Indies and whatnot, that they don't know how to work the camera. They don't know how to do that. And friends of the show, the Tomasellis out of Chicago, they have traveled around the country to different spots. They came to California, learned the Stronger style. They went to Georgia and worked for Bill Barons and Wildside and learned how to work TV, work the camera. And the guys they're not learning properly. How to work the camera side, how to work where the camera's at in the ring, and you can really tell that by TNA. And because these guys, and it's not just the director, okay? I'm upset with Brian when Brian buries the director for the TNA shows because it's not always their fault. Sometimes the guys just don't know how to work the cameras, and they just don't know. And that's where a developmental type of thing would come in very handy for TNA. What do you think of TNA getting some type of a developmental somewhere, somehow? Do you think it'll happen?
I don't know if it'll happen, but, I mean, it's definitely something that they need. You know, like I said, if you're not in the WWE, you're going to want to be in TNA, I guess. And, you know, you're going to go up there. You know, if you don't have a lot of time on television, you know, you're put in a spot where, hey, okay, look, we're going to put you on the show. You got 3 minutes to do this. Here's the finish. Not only do these guys want to get everything, every single time they're out there, they're taking crazy bump after crazy bump, getting it all out there, no stories being told. It's just a bunch of shit. And, you know, for those who've watched it for a long time, they don't like that. You can't keep up with it. There's no storyline. But so they definitely need some type of developmental. They need something going on up there. That's for sure.
Well, they're with the people that they have backstage working with them, their agents and whatnot. You would think that they would, you know, be able to, you know, pick up something. You know, you have Dutch Mantel who has done. You want to know how to brawl? Talk to Dutch. You want to know how to tell a good story for a 20-minute brawl, bloodbath? Talk to Dutch. He will teach you. They're not learning. It really bothers me. It's like these guys are out there trying to make a highlight tape.
Yeah, that's it.
You know?
There's nobody telling any story.
Yeah.
And then the problem is, not only is there nobody telling any story, but the guy telling the story is Don West, as far as the announcing team goes. So you're fucked. you're completely fucked. You've got a complete imbecile screaming, just putting. I mean, to the average fan, it's terrible, just ridiculous. You know, Lawler gets old after a while, but not to that extent.
But at least Lawler's trying to be funny. It's something.
Yeah, Lawler can be fun, exactly.
And then you have the comedy guy. You know, you don't have the doofus that's echoing what's going on in the ring. You know,
yeah.
God, wrestling people should do wrestling. That's just my opinion.
Well, maybe they should cut the other guy. Maybe we should just have. You know, I will actually watch this because it'll be so bad. Maybe they should put Don West and Mike Adamly together.
Oh God.
And I will actually watch that show, just to see how horrendous it is. I will actually, if they ever did, if they ever ended up in the same territory together, I would love to hear that.
With Vince Russo booking the show. Oh, train wreck.
Oh please, you got to have Vince. You got to have Vince Russo booking the show. Although they would probably have Mike Adamly as the champ if Vince Russo was booking the show.
Well, you mentioned Adamly. I'm not going to bury the guy. But do you think that Joey Styles stepped down, or do you think he was forced out, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit of both. But, you know, I bet you Joey's happy.
I bet you
he's happy what he's doing. Maybe they'll put him on the internet show. You know, he can do WWE.com. He doesn't, you know, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, he had to, you know, at least when Paul Heyman was feeding him lines, you know, in ECW, I mean, it was fresh, it was new, it was exciting. He's getting lines fed by people he doesn't respect. And he's getting lines fed to him by people he doesn't like. So he's not anything to brag about either. There's nothing he could really do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
when he would be on the air for the new ECW, it would come off like he's lying to you. You know,
he's a totally different guy.
You don't get the feeling. You know, you don't get the feeling from, you know, like 96 ECW where you're fucking compelled. You're biting your nails watching the TV. You don't get that. You know, Joey's not able to tell the stories and get things over the way that he was back in the day. But, you know, of course, that's Vince's fingerprints, and I didn't expect anything else.
Yeah, there's nothing Joey could do. I mean, back in the ECW days, he was great. He was their voice. You know, and basically, I don't think he ever respected WWE. I don't think he ever respected. I think when they would come out every week and talk about, you know, and bury Vince, I think he believed it. He got that 5-year contract from Vince, but you know, then he got the horse collar put on. There was nothing he could do,
mm-hmm.
So he was a shell of his former self. I think he was miserable. He didn't want to be there, and he's probably very happy in any other capacity. He's probably very happy to be off that TV.
Yeah, I don't blame him. No way. You in any line of work. You should be proud of what you do and not be ashamed to say, I do this for a living. And I'm pretty sure that Joey Styles is ashamed to say, I was a commentator for New York. And that's just personal opinion. And the thing is, you can even look on WWE 24/7 and see it.
Yeah.
That's what's sad, is you can order the on-demand and see Joey Styles in his prime
which is right now, they're running TV 1996 is prime, and you can see that. Then you can see what he's done before he left, and it is just, it's sad. It just saddens me because, oh, okay, the guys in the wrestling business, for all intents and purposes, are whores. They sell their bodies for money. No problem. They accept that. That's cool. But I think it's kind of fucked up that Joey did it. Joey, you know, he took the money. That's the bottom line. He took the money.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and he was put in a very, an impossible spot. He was going to replace JR. So, I mean, that's not going to work. Whoever comes in, it's just not going to happen. But a lot of people got to remember, too, when he was back with Heyman, he had a lot of stuff fed to him as well. But he had good stuff fed to him, and he was used to the system, and they were passionate about what they did. They used to be at Paul's house all the time, cutting the promos down in his mother's basement and over at Dreamer's house. And, you know, they were passionate about the product. They believed in it. And he came over here and saw the system, and now he's got Vince and those guys in the ear. So he didn't believe anything that he was being told to say. So it just wasn't going to work.
Oh, cool. Well, Mr. Fair, I'm going to cut you off a little early. I do
All right.
have a question. When are we going to have the return of Tough Talk? We need it back on the air.
We're going to be doing it from time to time. Oliver's got a busy schedule. And I do. I'm working just a shitload of hours up at the club. And once we can narrow it down to a better time and a better day and everything, we'll be back up and running. I got some guests lined up that people that have already said they'd be on that'll make good guests. And it was a decent show. We just like to have, but I want to have fun. If you're not going to have a good time doing the show and you can't say what you want, then don't do it. So, hopefully in the future we can, Oliver's a great guy and we can get back together and we'll be back on the air.
Cool. So, is there any way that people can follow, your misadventures? You have a MySpace or something like that?
Actually, I'm embarrassed to say I do have a MySpace. It's Mike Sawyer Kayfabe. And basically, I'm, pretty much on Brian's site on Figure Four Weekly. If you join up there, I'm on the board. A little too much, to be honest with you. And, you can pretty much follow me on there and the different shows. And, I'll do a couple shows with Brian or do some different things. That's pretty much it.
Cool. Well, Mike, thanks for your time tonight, brother. It was my pleasure. It was fun.
Yeah, I had a good time, man. Keep up the good work.
Well, we'll have to get you on next time with Coughlin. We're going to have a little debate.
Put me and Mikey on. I would love to do a show at Coughlin. I would love to do a show. I know on the board we got into it a little bit, but I like Mike. I think Mike is a very smart guy when it comes to MMA. So it would be fun to do a show with Mike.
He knows his shit, man, and you can't deny it. He knows his shit. So
he knows his shit. He breaks fights down just as good as anybody, and he's I sponsored him, for Christ's sake. When he was going to fight, although he didn't fight. And I like Coughlin. I like him. So if me and him got on a show together, that would be pretty interesting.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to cut you off. I got to run down some plugs and whatnot for my sponsors and all that fun stuff. I got to pay
cool.
the bills. So
go do it.
Like I said, once again, thanks for coming on, brother, and we will be definitely talking to you soon.
Sounds good, man.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was the real tennis. The world famous Mike Sawyer from Las Vegas. He is a frequent
contributor at F4WOnline.com. And he's definitely a good guy. It was a fun show this week. We had Brian Fritz from BetweenTheRopes.com on the first hour, and the second hour was Mr. Sawyer. Good stuff. We had some pro wrestling talk. We talked about indies, WWE, WrestleMania even, the Hall of Fame, mixed martial arts, and all kinds of stuff. We even got to bury TNA and that dumb shit Don West. I wanted to get Mike off the line because I do want to congratulate a friend of the show. Rob Feinstein at RF Video has gotten a pay-per-view slot for his Life in the Fast Lane DVD. It's a documentary on the pro wrestling business. It'll be airing throughout May and June on TVN affiliates, which include Charter, Mediacom, RCN, Insight, AT&T, and Verizon. It's a collection of interviews with many of the biggest stars in the industry talking about the perils of life in the industry. This is good. I've seen it, and this is really good stuff. I really suggest that everybody check this out. It's well worth your on-demand dime. Plus, you know, Rob's a good guy. No matter what anybody says, Rob's a good guy. Yeah, you know, he's got a good heart. You know, and you know, he's not afraid to you know, speak his mind, and you know, he also, you know, brings us those cool shoot interviews and whatnot. So, but yeah, enough of that. One quick hard plug: if you are anywhere in the Southern California region this weekend, we have the SoCal Pro Wrestling 1 year anniversary this Saturday. The main event for the SoCal Pro title, the returning Alcatraz, will be taking on Jason Redondo for the vacant title. It should be good. They also have, for the NWA World Heavyweight title, a couple friends of our show, actually, Scrap Iron and Adam Pearce will defend the NWA title against SoCal Crazy. Their first match that I saw in January was just off the charts. Good stuff. We have 0-10, Ricky Mandel against Chimera. I have the feeling that this is going to be Ricky Mandel's night. After last month, where Mr. Mandel kept up with Adam Pearce, I think that Mr. Mandel's time has come for, you know, to get out on the winning end of the stick, per se. Also, we have, which should be a kick-ass tag match, the Balor Brothers against the Young Bucks. What can you say? Okay, the Young Bucks are all over the NWA TV now, NWA Showcase. They're working all over the country. Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, Bart's AWS, they were in New Jersey last weekend. They're preparing to go on a tour of Dragon Gate. What more can you want in that match? You have the Ballards, who've been the measuring stick for tag team independent wrestlers for the last, 10-plus years. You know, what more can you ask for there? It's a pretty stacked show. That's all that I have now. I don't have the complete lineup or anything, but you can get all that at SoCalProWrestling.com. Okay, let's run down other plugs. Our website, RubberGuardRadio.com, where we archive our shows. I also have columnists there. They haven't been updated for a few weeks, but that will be changing in the very near future. Things have been kind of hectic here at the Rubber Guard headquarters. Also, you can hit us on MySpace. We'll gladly add you as a friend. If you're in the business, wrestler, promoter, manager, referee, announcer, even you, Don West, you can send us a friend request and maybe we can get you on the show. MySpace.com/RubberGuardRadio. Let me run down our other sponsors. WrestleWarehouse.com. For all your wrestling DVD needs, Lucha Masks, WWE Swag. Jeff also got in some CMLL action figures, which are pretty cool. Yeah, that might be something you might want to check out. Those are pretty cool. You can get those at WrestleWarehouse.com. And our other sponsor would be my home promotion up here in Northern California, FogCityWrestling.com. They have a DVD release party in May. I'm not sure about the date, but you can get that information at FogCityWrestling.com. And they have a show coming up in July, if I remember right. I'm pretty sure it's July. I think it's July 5th. July 5th sounds about right. That would be at Kezar Auditorium off of Haight. It's a beautiful building. Should be fun. I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag on who's coming in, but there should be some guests from out of town. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying who. I'm not saying why or where. Nope.
but there should be guests from out of town. That's all I'm saying. I'll tell you, if you haven't seen the Fog City product, you need to go out of your way to see it. It's just something different, completely different. You can get the DVD of their first show on their website. The debut show, January 12th, 08, was just really fun. Had a really fun main event. Good stuff, top to bottom, good work. A lot of entertainment there. A hot crowd. The Fog City crowd's just hot. No, I'm running down my last few seconds. Alex, call me later.
Blog Talk Radio.
I love you, Jess. Hello? Hello?